in order to heal, you have to feel.
But I also want to feel the lows. I want to feel frustration. I want to feel rage. I want to feel jealousy. I want to feel anger. I want to feel grief. And I want to feel it deeply.
So that could already just be a project, is learning how to just be.
Aliveness is like that. It's like the electricity in your body being awakened.
I can meditate and everyone can meditate. There's nothing to learn. It's just a remembering.
Hello, my loves, and welcome back to another episode of Oh Hi Self. I'm your host, Sandra Possing, and today I have a guest for you who is, I'll start by saying that this guest is one of the most grounded humans I have ever encountered. Actually, one of the most grounded and embodied humans I've ever encountered. And our guest today is my friend, Rebecca Mars. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you so much. And yes, those words. I'm human. I have my days where I'm like, I don't feel those things, but it's always so special to hear a reflection like that. So I'm going to soak in that for a little bit here.
Hell yeah. Well, certainly I'm such a big proponent of kind of noticing our impact and taking responsibility for our impact on the world around us and people around us. And that's just, to me, that is like such the obvious impact that you have on people. Like you walk into a room and it's like the whole room just kind of goes, it's like breathes a little sigh of relief. So anyway, listeners, this is Rebecca. We go kind of way back. It's like coming up on probably 8 years or something now. We originally met back in the whatever, 2016, 2017, something like that, in a business mastermind. Shout out to Emily Utter, who brought us all together at that time. We were colleagues in that program. And then the year after, Rebecca joined my mastermind, which is called Unleashed. So she was a client for a bit. And then I had another round, I think it was the following year, and I brought her onto my team as a support coach for my clients. And again, just because of that, like that grounded, warm, embodied energy that she brings was just something that I wanted to have in that container. And then I think that was, yeah. And then you kind of were in the background of another program that I had again too. So Rebecca's someone who I like to have her energy in my space. So let's start by just having you give us like, what's the kind of mini bio? Like, how would you say in your own words, just what is the work that you do in the world? And then we'll get into your full story after that.
The mini bio. Yes. Well, I've been playing with, and I actually feel like years ago, I remember you kind of chewing on like life coach. And I think a lot of coaches can relate, like, what do I even call myself? And kind of made full circle of like, I'm an embodiment coach. I'm this. And I'm like, okay, I help people live their life. And even more so now, it's like really this aliveness thing. And so I think my what life's work has kind of come to this point where it's like honoring everything between birth and death and really living that life that you want, but specifically using tools like yoga and meditation and other embodiment practices. And so I was born in the Midwest. I'm a Midwest girl at heart, born right in the middle of Missouri. And I kid but not that I was born 7 weeks early and my mom was practicing yoga the night she went into labor. And so yoga has always felt like just a part of me. And it became a professional thing after college. Did not go to college to teach yoga, but, you know, one of those things that just works out that way. And so I've been teaching yoga to groups and studios, probably every place you can imagine, teaching people to become yoga teachers. And I'm still teaching, though that also has branched into just using it one-on-one with people. And as most things happen, when you step into this like personal growth world and helping people do it, just things kind of come up. And I realize like, wow, okay, now I'm helping people meditate. And now I'm helping people heal their trauma through somatic experiencing work and just kind of following that thread of life of what I feel like I'm put here to do, which is really just help people live, but in this mind, body, spirit enhanced, connected way.
I love the word aliveness. I think my listeners will have heard me use that word a lot too, because it's something that I see so much in my work too in the last 12 years. It's kind of like one of my goals, I would say, when I'm working with someone is I want them to walk away after our time together, like being more connected to their own aliveness, which is, I would say that's a really common word in the coaching space, but maybe a little bit less so in the mainstream. But to me, aliveness is like that. It's like the electricity in your body being awakened, you know, and it's like, in my mind, it's mostly someone's own experience of themselves and their body, but it's also, it translates to how people perceive you. Like when I work with a client, for example, and we'll start out and it's kind of like, there's the light has been dimmed in their eyes. You can just see that there's like a dullness or a blahness, or it really is like a lack of aliveness. Like they're going through the motions and maybe things are good, but there's not like this crackle or this energy. And then after, you know, different things bring it online for different people. But a lot of times it might be just them getting more back in touch with their passions or finding work that's more aligned or just taking better care of themselves physically. Or a lot of times though, it's like, are you doing things in your day-to-day life that you even like, you know? Like, so sometimes it's just, they start painting or they start dancing again. And then you can see it, you know, it like really is, it's like the light comes on in people's eyeballs and they carry their bodies differently and their voice has a different like timbre to it. It's just such a cool thing to witness when that aliveness starts to come back online and then when the dial gets really turned up.
Absolutely. I love thinking of it as electricity. And my yoga brain is like, and you know, it's like this life force energy, it's prana or chi, you know, it's like, it's available to us all. But yeah, I totally can relate to just seeing that light. And that's definitely what I hope to bring to others as well. Cheers to aliveness.
To aliveness. So when you and I first met, you were living in Sarasota, Florida, was mm-hmm. it? And since then you've made a big move from Florida to California. And I remember, so we've been less in touch over the last few years, but I remember a lot of the time when we were working together in different capacities, you talked a lot about this, like, you know, you had a lot of really cool things going on in your chapter, in your life, in your work in Florida. And yet there was always this like, California was like calling to you. You'd go to San Diego for these yoga teacher trainings and different things. Can you talk a little bit about like, how, because for a lot of people, you know, maybe they think about like, oh, I'd like to make some big move to this other state or this other country, or I'd love to start a business, or I'd love to make some big leap like that. But moving from one coast all the way to the other coast and completely leaving your life behind is kind of a big deal. What was that about for you? And how did you even make it happen?
Yeah, it's definitely turned into this, like, I appreciate you reflecting that and saying that. And I also helped a client recently move from Austin to New York, and it's starting to show up a little more of like, okay, this is a big deal that I did this. And I forget sometimes the immensity of what I did. And there's layers and layers to the story. But yeah, I think even growing up, and I've talked to my partner, John, about this, and I don't know if it's just like watching Saved by the Bell, Clueless comes to mind, like all the things that kind of highlighted California living. And maybe not everybody had this draw to it, but I can remember as a kid just thinking like that was just the coolest, like the palm trees, the sunshine. And it, now, like knowing my language now, it's like it definitely touching my soul. It was like this knowing, like, I know that place. I know California. And through my yoga training, my first one, I was able to come out to Manhattan Beach in 2008. That was my first time in California. And I remember just like feet on the ground being like, I'm home. Like, I love this place. And I think a lot of people can experience that. Yeah. But it just really felt like deeper than just, ooh, I'm on vacation and I like the sunshine. It was like something more like literally in my gut. But then I moved from Missouri to Florida, spent a chapter there for 7 years. And there was just not the same feeling. And I think the more people can get into their bodies and really learn how to honor that intuitive part of them, which we each have, it's just sometimes harder to listen to depending on things that people have been conditioned to listen to minus their gut. But yeah, it was just this calling. And at one point when I was out here, then my mentor that I met in St. Louis when I lived there, and she was based in Encinitas here, and I got to start coming to Encinitas, and then go figure, this is also fun stuff, how the universe works, that a girl I knew through St. Louis, I started, this is when email lists were just, I feel like starting out back when you were starting, you know, right before we met, Skype was the only way to talk to people. I feel like Zoom was a baby and FaceTime was hardly a thing sort of thing. But I found this business coach, Emily, you mentioned, through someone in St. Louis. And then Emily happened to live in San Francisco, and I love that she traveled and had this California connection. So there are just these common, like these breadcrumbs, whatever you want to call them. And then meeting you, and somehow Encinitas became the hub, and I was able to come out. And on one trip, I would go to Swami's beach there, and that was my favorite place. And I would just like hold that image when I would go home and meditate. And I got a necklace with the coordinates of Encinitas and wore that necklace like for probably a couple of years. So it was just, you know, I think now in hindsight, like looking at all these parts of manifesting something like a big move, I mean, it didn't just happen quickly. It was happening for a very long time. And maybe we'll get into like deeper soul stuff. But I remember at one point I had a reading with a woman who was, I forget, you know, intuitive to a certain degree, psychic. But she said, oh yeah, you're Lumerian, which there's the ancient civilizations of Atlantis and Lumeria is the Pacific Ocean. And she said it so just like casually, like, oh, casually, of course you feel great out there. That's where you're from, like lifetimes ago. And I was like, okay, that makes sense too. So it was just like, but I had to hear, like, my human brain was just not ready. So it was this drawn out thing, but eventually I just could not deny this like calling West. And then the pandemic happened and it was what it was, but it really was an interruption that I needed. And then here I am. So I can go more into the specific steps, but yeah, I just think if anyone is listening and they can feel something, like if they're already questioning like some big leap of any kind, it's like, what does that feel like and where is it coming from? And if it's more than just a thought you're having, it's like a feeling, definitely don't ignore it.
And in the modern world that we live in, and certainly in Western culture, we're so conditioned to make all our decisions with our logic and, you know, be reasonable, be realistic. And we're not taught anything about, I mean, unless we have some really cool hippie parents or so, or the, you know, crazy uncle or something who's like into spirituality in a way where we are taught to even tune, like what our intuition is and how to tune into it. And not even spiritual, it's just like, how do you listen to your own inner knowing, your gut, your instincts? And we're so lacking in those tools growing up. So if yoga was kind of like your first love and the first stage of your career and your work, at what point how did meditate? I mean, I know yoga and meditation oftentimes go hand in hand, but how did you go from teaching yoga and doing yoga teacher trainings to then incorporating meditation as well?
Yeah, well, I was at, so yoga was a thread, and then I graduated college and ended up, and I always loved exercise. And I don't honestly know still to this day where that came from. My parents were not athletic. But I always made like little obstacle courses and things in my backyard. And I remember getting my first set of 5-pound dumbbells at like age 11 or something. And so when I graduated college in my senior year, I got a job at the front desk at a gym. And it was like through all the schooling, I was like, I just want to work at a gym. And so I became a personal trainer. And then that training job landed me in a yoga teacher training. So I was kind of in this like more physical place. And I was that person where I heard the word meditation, but I never thought I was a meditator. And they do go hand in hand, yoga and meditation. But you know, this was over 15 years ago too, where it was still a weird thing, especially in the Midwest. Like, remember, I'm living in the middle of Missouri here. And so even to find yoga, there were studios, there were definitely the places, but I was teaching at a gym. And so it really wasn't as spiritual or meditative. But then when I moved to St. Louis and kind of made this next step in my yoga teaching and met my mentor, she introduced me to one of my teachers, Lauren Roche. I've been studying specifically with him for the last probably over 8 years now. But we had to do this meditation part to my advanced yoga training. And I was like, going in with these ideas.
Okay, fine.
Meditation, like what? I don't meditate. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate. I run to meditate. Like that's my meditation, is I go running. And so I kind of said that, but he changed my mind about everything. And so he has this instinctive approach to meditation. And so it really was this pivotal moment and like meeting him in this, I can picture the room we're in. It's actually right down the road now. I was visiting there from St. Louis at the time. But he said, okay, so what do you love to do? And now take that into your meditation. Imagine that. So it turned into this immediate like embodied thing of like picture myself running, because right now that was in that moment, running was my quote meditation. And so I was before that moment saying, I don't meditate. And then from after that moment, I was like, I can meditate and everyone can meditate. And so then studying more with him in this instinctive way, realizing we each are born built to meditate. It really is just what we are capable of. There's nothing to learn. It's just a remembering. And it starts in kind of like you mentioned with the aliveness of people thinking of things that they love to do. It's kind of in that same energy when you get down to like what's actually going on when you're doing something that you love. There's a meditative flow state quality. And so once I really started to like liberate my thinking mind from thinking about meditation and that I needed to do it a certain way, and really opening up to really more of a feeling state and in this embodied, as I describe it, way of meditating. Like it's just become really fun to insert when people are ready. But it's nothing that I like force feed. And sometimes I forget that meditation coaching is definitely something that I do. Because then there's also that point where meditation's everywhere now. Like fast forward from when I was in Missouri to living out here in 2024, everyone knows about meditation. Everyone's meditating, but there's this next level though that I do like helping people, because anyone can find an Insight Timer app, a YouTube, they're all great, a place to go. But what's going on when you meditate? And so then that's also where the trauma healing comes in and really looping it all together, because we're more than just a body mind. We're layers and layers of different life experiences. And so that can show up. So anyway, I think I kind of made a curveball-y answer to your original question, but there's definitely still a connection of yoga and meditation in what I offer, but it's almost more fun. Don't tell my yoga clients this, but to sit and just talk about what comes up when people meditate, because that's really where I find the deeper change, transformation, the parts of you that are ready to make the leap that actually will help you make the leap. Like, it's through your body, and meditation will get you to that part of you that will actually get the momentum going, I find.
That's such a cool, just I'm like stuck on the reframe of meditation, especially for someone who's resistant to it or new to it, to think of it as just picture yourself doing that thing that you love. Like, that's such a simple reframe that feels like it could be a total, like an easy entry point for somebody who is resistant or thinks, you know, I have to sit here and like focus on my breathing. That sounds so boring. Or I have to sit here and just notice my thoughts, and that's boring. And most of my thoughts are just anxieties. Why do I want to notice it? You know, just like so many reasons why someone might, or I don't have time, I'm too busy. But to, as an entry point, to think like, I'm just going to close my eyes and imagine running on a trail through a forest, if that's what I love to do. Or in my case, it would be like turning on some imaginary music that I know is going to get me going with a really heavy bass line and something that's going to make my body turn into like a primal cat kind of movement, probably some sort of EDM or some sort of like world lounge kind of thing. And I don't even think I could like sit with my eyes closed without moving if I started to, but I would just picture myself dancing in a context where I felt so wild and free. I'm probably like naked except for a thong with just a few friends who I feel comfortable and safe with. And just like, I'm smiling even just picturing that. And to think that like, wow, I could like quote unquote meditate for 2 minutes at a time anywhere by just tapping into that picture, that mental image, which immediately, it's like it probably floods my body with brain chemicals that are really like healthy feel good hormones. And then if I could start there, then I can go into other more, you know, advanced meditation techniques and sitting for longer periods and trying all sorts of other things. But it's like, what a cool entry point. And also just a tool that you can use for aliveness. Like, so much of the manifestation and stuff that I love riffing on, it like if somebody just wants to be kind of raising their vibration in general, whether you're trying to manifest a specific thing or not, it's like you're just wanting to get yourself into an energetic state that's more alive. Like, what a great way to do it. Close your eyes and picture yourself doing that thing that you love.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, totally. Some of the most brilliant stuff is like stupidly simple. It just always makes me laugh. I'm like,
yeah, how many little kids do that? Totally. We did it as kids. We imagined, we like daydreamed, you know, and that in a way it's like, what's the point of meditating? I asked my class that this morning, like, think of if you are meditating, like, what's the whole point? And like, it's right there. And to me, it's sure, it can be anything. There's no right or wrong here, but there's something energetic about it. You want to feel a different way, and probably it's better than the way you're feeling right now. Mm. And so it's like, as my teacher calls it, it's like doorways. You just need to find a doorway that works for you, but there's billions of doorways. Like, each of us has our own unique, you know, blend or recipe or whatever you want to call it, of finding that meditation that works. And it can change. Like, it's good to have just a whole, like, a plethora, like so many options to meditate. Some days I use an app. Some days I'm able to sit and daydream about good stuff. Some days I am moving my body. Other days I'm lying on the floor. You know, it's like, there's no right or wrong. Some days you don't need to close your eyes to meditate. So it's, yeah, it's like, what's the whole point? Is it to feel more alive, to feel calm, to lift your vibe? Probably that's something that most people want when they meditate. And why not use something that you already know makes you feel good, at least to buffer? And sometimes I'll describe it as making sure we do the feel good ones, because not to be like a rah, rah, but at some point, because life wants you to heal, call it life, God, universe, whatever, that life force, aliveness, energy, you know, we're made of all of our experiences, like I mentioned earlier. So what also happens in meditation is that you do eventually bump into the sadness, the things that actually need to be healed, the things that we've shoved away for a while, an old memory. And so meditation is a lot of things. Ultimately, it's a healing practice and tool that will help you do all sorts of things. But I like the feel good, what do you love? Because it really does prepare you, warm you up to, like you said, whether it's a more advanced type of thing where you're sitting still or doing some more specific mantra or whatever, or even just to hold some space for yourself to heal somatically, that's also what happens. And so I think the feel good stuff is so important. We need that to help counter the other stuff that also is tucked into what meditation can help bring to the surface.
I think too, given just the busy pace of life that most, at least most people I know are cycled into and like in this just kind of hamster wheel of go, go, go. And like meditating in whatever shape or form you do it is a way of inserting little pockets of like, I forget what the term is. That's a gray space or gray time or something where it's like, it's unscheduled. It's time where you're not busy trying to be productive or doing something. It's like time for your brain to relax and process things, your body to relax and process things. And I think creating space for ourselves to feel our feelings, notice our thoughts, feel our feelings. Like so much of the time, and I mean, here we are in the modern world, right? Like people feel feelings that are uncomfortable and the immediate reflex is to numb or escape or run away or deny it or do, you know, 1 million other vices. But it's sometimes it's like, I remember one of my mentors was leading some discussion and people were like, but what do you do when you feel this feeling? Like, what's your, you know, modality for like processing this complicated emotion? And she was like, I literally just sit on the couch and let myself feel sad. And like, I think the student wanted like some complicated formula. Like, you know, you do this breathing technique and this meditation technique. She was like, I just sit there and I'm like, I just notice that I feel sad. And then I just feel sad. And it's like, we don't give ourselves space to just be and feel and have thoughts and like notice that, yeah, life is fucking hard and people die and we lose jobs and like there's all this shitty stuff and so much yes to all the bringing in the aliveness and the intentional positivity, all of that. And we need to just like be with what is and honor it and allow ourselves to go through it. So having a tool like meditation in all its many iterations and modalities and whatever, it's like, it's just this gift where we can be like, I just keep picturing myself like inserting it into something. Like I'm inserting 3 minutes of just like, just being.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we need that pausing. We need that space.
Pause. Yeah.
The space is crucial. If we think of like in yoga for the yogis out there, like the word vinyasa, a lot of people have heard of that. And it means cycle essentially. And think of a cycle, there's a beginning, a middle, ending. And there's space, and we like to override space also as a culture, especially here in the West. We like beginnings, middles, endings, and we want to jump from an ending to a new beginning. You know, even just I'm thinking of some clients who are like getting out of relationships. They're already trying to find the next partner. It's like actually space or in between jobs, but it's not in our dialogue usually to applaud someone for taking space. And then we think of meditating and things like that. They're getting more applause and attention. And still, it's not necessarily everyone's first thing to think of inserting space because we're just so used to overriding it in general. So yes. And 3 minutes, 30 seconds, 5 seconds, like start with whatever you can.
So yoga is, I'm thinking of your life in like these stages. So there's the yoga stage, which once you began, it will never end. And then you layered meditation on top of that. And then, meditation and personal training. So fitness was also a thing. And then a more recent modality of yours that you are trained in now is somatic experiencing, right? I think I've talked about somatic experiencing in a couple of past episodes, not because I know jack shit about it, just because I know of it. And I know that I know it can be a really powerful modality. And I know like a little bit about the basics, but I've been waiting until I have someone who can actually speak with some authority on the topic. And so I'm really excited to hear what your experience with somatic experiencing has been. So basically how'd you get into it and what the fuck is it? And what do we need to know about it?
Yeah. I didn't realize how far back I'd been experiencing somatic experiencing because it was actually really infused into my mentor. I don't know if she was one of the first people to go through programs, but it's been around a while as an organization, as a program since Peter Levine started back in the 70s or 60s, somewhere like that. And it's really cool if we think of like this stuff has been going on. I think I forget when I first met you and you're talking about life coaching too. Like there's these cool guys that are like in their 70s, this era that back then they were helping humanity. They were creating life coaching. They were creating PTSD support. You know, so this stuff has been finally now it's like exploding in the mainstream, but it's just been like laying such cool foundation people like Peter. And so anyway, there's a few other, there's also Richard Schwartz, who's getting a lot of attention right now for his IFS, the internal family systems work. And so, and there's several, and even like my meditation teacher, Deepak Chopra, like these people have been doing this for decades. So it's nothing new, but it's finally getting some attention and it's being used and infused into all sorts of self-healing and somatic experiencing. So with that SE, we'll call it, or we can say the mouthful every time, but I didn't realize until the pandemic that it was something that I wanted to study. And part of it was personally, I was realizing my own stuff. Like, okay, I met a therapist there and she wasn't SE trained, but she used somatic. And so also just to mention, the word somatic is so hot right now. Like everyone's using it. It means from the body. So there's not just one somatic way of doing things. And it is a word that people can use to describe a lot of different things. And there are different somatic healing programs out there and this and that. So kind of buyer beware, or just know that just because someone puts somatic on it, like someone was telling me the other day, there was like somatic weight loss on Instagram, some ad popped up. There's like people are using the word a lot. So just beware. But I think the somatic, I mean, it roots from like a Latin Greek word or something. So it's nothing new verbiage wise, but somatic experiencing started when Peter was studying PTSD and realizing that there was something more than just cognitive releasing of trauma specifically in the body. Mm. And so I was realizing as I was going through a big life change too, that I met this therapist in Florida. She really turned me on to like the word somatic. She was doing some different practices along with all sorts of types of therapies, more cognitive based. But it became very clear that my level of body based everything that I was already doing, I remember I saw another counselor too, who was a family therapist type person. And I just felt so flat, and it works for some people. A friend referred me, but I felt like I was just sitting like, this isn't doing anything. Mm. And so I knew that there was just something missing from my own healing. And then I realized like, oh yeah, like SE mentor was into this for a long time. It actually was used in the yoga training I was in and taught people just trauma-informed period. So trauma-informed, another little word combo that people we'll see a lot these days, and that can mean a lot of things as well, not necessarily somatic. But anyway, so all these little breadcrumbs in this sense were starting to come together. And so I signed on, and I had a wild last year of my life. So I'm actually finishing up this year in the advanced year. But with somatic experiencing, I really was drawn to it because it's really honoring the slowing down. And you can Google it. You can find all kinds of YouTubes with Peter. I would definitely recommend. He's still put stuff out there. I think he's 80 something at this point, but he is pretty legendary in his work with this. But it's all about, and I forget who said this in my training, it was like watching paint dry, like that level of slow or slower is really the pace that through SE, oftentimes that's where we have to get to let some of these feelings show up, some of these energies that have been just stored away inside of us to come through. And so as I was going through my own somatic healing, and I started to read his stuff and get into the training, and of course it starts showing up in my clients too. I'm aware of it. I have some new things to use. My teachers say, use what you know. So I use what I know. And it was just helping people figure out even things like anxiety, depression. It's so easy for us all to label stuff like that with a word. And I've just really watched people get stuck in the words and the labels of things. But what I like about SE is that you slow down enough to get with the energy of the thing that you're saying. And there's so many ways to approach it, but kind of in this example here, it's like, well, so you say you're anxious, but what does that feel like? You know, And a lot of times it's a real quick, people want to react or respond in like not even a second, but it's learning how to slow down. But even that alone can be so challenging for people. So I've learned that there's kind of, when I'm starting to use it with folks, it's either one, it's a pacing thing. It's very common to not be comfortable in the slowness. So that could already just be a project, is learning how to just be slower, yeah, not super slow. And kind of playing with, you know, how do we help you be a little more okay right here and now? And then there's also a feeling piece. And some people are just not feelers, but we're all feelers. We're meant to feel. We have these senses as human beings, but because of X, Y, and Z reasons. So there's also those, what I'm seeing, at least the people I attract, there's a disconnect to. So I say, well, what do you feel, Sandra? And you're like, well, I don't know. And it's okay. But then I'm wondering, well, you're built to feel. We're all built to feel. And in order to heal, you have to feel. So how can I help you feel? So somatic experiencing specifically really enables a slowdown, like a space holding that feels safe, and allows someone to start to feel things that maybe have not been safe to feel, perhaps even their whole life before they were born. Even there's stuff that can go on when you're, of course, there's genetics from mom and dad, and there's generational like trauma and stored things in the epigenetic part of it all. And then there's also, you know, in mom's womb and at birth, you know, all this stuff. So who knows when things might have been stored away from. It could be definitely before you were able to speak or do things like that. So the one last thing I want to mention about SE is that sometimes I think people get scared of trauma healing, or they start to hear there's trauma. That word's also very common. Mm. And it's not an approach. And some types of therapies are like, tell me your deepest, darkest problem. Tell me where it hurts. And we're going to go there and like just poke our finger right in. That's not SE. Somatic experiencing is really about teasing the as far out as we need to go the edges. And it might take months for someone to even feel safe to look at me in the eye or whatever. You know, it's like, it's okay. We just have to figure out where do we begin. And it's the edge work versus the go straight to the problem work. And I think that's also really common and people think that's the way. But I really appreciate this slower, subtle, and essentially it's the body has to feel safe to open up. This is where the trauma is stored, and we have to slow down and feel safe to do that. So that edging is so, so important, just pulling way back to just the edges of a feeling or a concept or an energy. And so anyway, it's been really interesting to use that as it's come up with clients, and it just can be used for all sorts of things. And really the healing, it's so that you can back to aliveness, enjoy this life. It's like, what's the point of healing? You know, why are we going through all these tunnels of trauma and blah, blah, blah? Well, it's so that you can feel good. And actually when you do healing work like this, the good gets gooder. Like you really do get to feel the amazingness of life even more presently. So there's just like, I don't know, it's a win-win in my eyes.
I've always said or observed and believed really strongly that it's kind of like if I'm for those of you who can't see me, I'm doing like a little, I'm holding my hands out to my thigh, and it's like the average human has this, I'm holding my hands maybe like a foot apart. And it's like our ability to feel our quote unquote positive emotions only goes as far to the right as my ability to feel my quote unquote negative emotions or uncomfortable emotions goes to the left. And most of us, we stay in the safe range because we're so terrified of feeling our more uncomfortable emotions like sadness or grief or rage or resentment or whatever. And so it's like we kind of stunt our emotional capacity because we're so uncomfortable. And then in doing so, we stunt our ability to experience bliss and joy and ecstasy and those things too. And I find that the more we can like expand our range at whatever pace feels safe to us. So it's like in something like SE, it sounds like it creates such a safe space for people to go at a pace that's right for them to just slowly expand, which expands their ability to look at and honor and be with the harder emotions and the harder experiences and past traumas, which then expands their ability to hold and like sustain and celebrate the amazing emotions too, which a lot of us, I think, we're scared of those. That's why so many of us have a fear of success, because we have like a, to quote, what's his face from the Big Leap, Gay Hendricks, Big Leap. Yeah. Yeah. Where he talks about, we have like an upper limit for our capacity to hold joy. Cause we're just, as soon as we start having some joy and success, we're like, when's the other shoe is going to drop? We're so convinced that it can't possibly be this good for very long. And then we inevitably go self-sabotage in some way. So I think and a modality like SE could be a way to expand our emotional capacity in all directions. So we can, like, that's, I'm like, I mean, listeners, you know me, I'm such a feeler. I want to feel all of it in every possible direction. all the highs, but I also want to feel the lows. I want to feel frustration. I want to feel rage. I want to feel jealousy. I want to feel anger. I want to feel grief, and I want to feel it deeply. And I want to not fear my emotions, you know, and I want to have the tools and I want to have the self-trust to trust that I can handle any emotion and know that I can like sit with the discomfort of an emotion and still make choices about how do I want to live? Like, well, how do I want to respond to this? And I have tools where I can like sit with an uncomfortable emotion and trust that I'll be okay. And I know that it's temporary and I know that I'll get through it. Whereas I think so many of us, we're just so afraid of our emotions since we do all sorts of weird things, just squash them down. But then we also really limit ourselves in what we are able to go out and experience because we are like shrouded in all of our fears, afraid of how we're going to feel if X, Y, Z happens.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And a little plug for your podcast, the episode with Heidi Rogers, there might be a couple out there, but she went into so much great detail around trauma and feeling and some of the things too. And listening to you in that and knowing you, like you are also such an embodied human. And I think it's reminding me as you're sharing all this of, it's just like getting out of your head and into your body. And it really is kind of that simple. And like we were saying earlier, just with meditation and stuff like that. So too is this whole healing thing. And right now there's a lot of noise in the healing space. There's do this type of breath work and do that and do that. And you got, it's like, no, like your friends, like sit on the couch and feel like whatever you need to do. But it really is about just making some space to do all the things. But to also, like you said, the self-trust, like there is a level of feeling ready to go there within yourself. And I love your curiosity though. And I just feel like so much of what you've studied, like you're already doing your own somatic experiencing. And I think a lot of people are, if they're relating to how you're sharing some of this, of just like knowing something and then having space and time to feel it and process it, knowing that the human, all of us have this full range of life experience. And it's so important to feel that full spectrum of energetic vibration or whatever. And that's kind of it. And then having enough awareness, like awareness is always that top piece that I cultivate within anyone I'm working with. It's like awareness first. You have to have a like fly on the wall perception of a situation so you don't get tangled in your emotions in trying to figure out your emotions. Yeah. And so having awareness to then do all those things you just mentioned and to be ready and able. And yeah, it's, you can self-heal for sure. And you can do all of this type of stuff. And that's really cool too, with really a lot of these things, but it's like learning something so you can then use it whenever you need it, just like meditation. And you can have coaches and guides for the rest of your life. That's beautiful too. But also so much of this, it's an educational thing. It's stuff that you never learned as a kid. You never really learned how to, you know, do the feeling thing. And so now as an adult, you can really start to understand like what sensations are going on in your body when you're triggered and have some new tools so you can like live better and move along, you know?
One of the tools that I think is also just like, it's so stupidly simple. It's like almost embarrassing, but it's also like the best thing in the world, which is just when we're feeling something to not intellectualize it, but just to try to literally point to where in my physical body am I feeling this? Because how many times do we ask someone, how are you feeling? And they'll come up with like 100 answers that are like, oh, I feel like my boss is just an asshole, or I feel like my boss doesn't understand me. I'm like, that's not a feeling. You're using feel, but you really mean you think, or you believe or something. It's like they're making interpretations about a circumstance. So it's like, but what are you feeling? And if they're forced to use a feeling word, it's like, oh, I feel mad, or I feel sad, or I feel like there was some injustice, or I feel like I was wronged or something like that. But it's like, but where is it in your body? And for so many people, I think they've just never been asked to like do that before. So it's like, we don't even have the vocabulary for it. And then if we're actually forced to slow down enough to try to identify it, you're like, well, where does even, like, let's start with the really basic emotions. Like, okay, mad, like, where does mad live? How does mad feel in my body? And I'm like, if you actually pause and tune in, you can start to feel like, ooh, mad, like oftentimes like my fists are clenching because the primal part of me is ready to go hit somebody. My jaw is clenching because the primal part of me is ready to go bite somebody. My legs are tensing up because I'm ready to get ready to fight, you know? And then it's like, okay, where do I feel sad? And it's like, sad feels like this lump in my throat. It feels like my shoulders are collapsing down. It feels like a wetness in my eyes and my nose and my mouth that wants to all like glob down my face. Or like, I feel frustration. Like, what the fuck does frustration feel like? And like, it just feels like discomfort in my entire body. Like, my shoulders are tense, my neck is tense. I'm like kind of restless. Can't decide if I want to like run or spin in a circle or stand still. Or, and then it's like, what does calm feel like? And it's like, calm feels like everything, like my center of gravity goes down. I feel like my center of gravity is in my pelvis. Whereas if I'm like frenetic, my center of gravity is like in my throat, you know? And so just those little, the simple act of noticing where a quote unquote feeling, which we want so badly to intellectualize or create interpretations around, but it's just like, what is the physiological sensation that's happening in my body and where? And sometimes it's really trippy. Like there's like, oh, I'm nervous. I have butterflies in my stomach. Okay. We use that language a lot. So that feels familiar. But then there's language where you're like, huh, like, honestly, the only thing I can feel that's associated with this emotion is like the back of my ankles feel weird. You know, and you're like, what's that about? Or you're like, my boobs feel heavy. I don't know. Just like, but we have to actually slow down and tune in and get out of our head and get into our body, which is really hard for people, which makes a lot of sense because we're conditioned to do the opposite and we're not given sort of any guidance on how to do this. So we've got a long way to go, I think, but I'm so glad that there are tools out there like SE for this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And there's like, if people just search feelings wheel, you know, there's so many cool resources the out there. And like you said, even draw a stick figure and just list out the things like these emotions that you just mentioned and just draw like some people, and you have to learn a few things. One, you do have to learn the language of your body. And it's like any language. If you don't speak Chinese and someone's like, hey, tell me this in Chinese, like, I don't know that language type of thing. And so same with the language of the body, you have to learn it. And we hear it all the time. Listen to your body as a yoga teacher. And it's like, yeah. Listen to your body. But if people,
but what does it mean?
What's it even mean? What's it saying? Like, I'm listening, but I can't understand it. And so be okay with that part of the process too, because most of us probably were not taught to listen to the body as children. And that's just where we're at. And that's okay. Or people have lived through trauma that has made them shut down where it's not even safe to feel their body, or certain assaults or abuses thing. You know, people have reasons to not feel safe in their body. So to ask someone to feel, then there could be other things. And that's definitely, you know, in a way it's so common and that's okay. But it's like taking time to slow down, you know, and figure out, okay, how do I understand what the feeling of whatever in the body? And you're naming all these great things. And I wanted to also chime in, like, sometimes it's going outside the body. So if someone's listening right now and they're like, yeah, I don't know how to describe like frustration, I just am giving words, like Sandra just said, well, it's okay to like give metaphors, give examples. Like we just want to move energy. And and this is more of like the way I come at the SE, because I'm already an embodied yoga person. And there's plenty of people that are coming at it top down. So top down being like the therapist, the counselors, the people doing the things that are more heady, which are so important. I entered year one feeling, am I at a place in this training? And they all said, you just wait, because there's a shift where the intellect kind of, it has to settle, because people that have a background like myself, more in body-based stuff, tend to thrive at a certain point because there's this better understanding of the languaging of the body. And so there's this embodiment part where it just takes time to start to shift. And if you need to go outside of yourself right now to describe anything, but feel the energy of describing. So when you think of like, oh, I'm just mad at my boss, it's like, well, just describe the situation to me. Use words. Those words are going to start to move the energy. And maybe at some point, the word energy is going to turn into something that you feel. So it's okay if right now it's like, I don't feel anything in my body, but I can tell you all about it. Or I can tell you a story that this makes me think of, or I can tell you a memory, you know, and that's okay. And that's all that I've just found. I attract people that get kind of freezy and stuck and shut down, and it's hard to feel. So it's a lot of that first. It's like, just talk, feel safe enough to talk to me. And so I'm really hopefully cultivating that safe environment or even just a conversation. And then the language of the body starts to be learned in that safety, in those descriptors, in the teensy tiniest little, not even a flicker of your finger movement. That's what we're looking for. You know, at a certain point, your nervous system probably will want to release if we're doing this specific type of trauma work. We're looking for releases. We're looking for those things that were held for so long and releasing them. And the other point I wanted to mention where, you know, I said you can learn this stuff and do it yourself, but there's something very, very powerful in our nervous systems to be witnessed, as with so much growth and change, to have a safe witnessing eye person. So really making sure too that one, you feel safe in the environment of a therapist or a healer or someone you're doing work with, like make sure that you feel good with them, but also know that it's not just to do it with somebody else, but there's some transfer that happens when you're seen officially in your own specific healing part of this stuff that I'm talking about. So witnessing is really key energetically as well. And that will help you actually make lasting change, which it's probably true to a lot of other coaching and just being seen in general, but yeah. Know that you don't need to do this stuff alone as much as you're kind of saying you can play with it alone, but just know the power in human connection and in that way.
You bring up, you're bringing up the point in my mind too, of just like, it's such a good reminder that we get to start where we are and do what we can with what we have, you know, like for people who have really deep trauma and who are not at all able to go straight back to revisit a certain incident because it's too triggering and it would basically re-traumatize them in the moment. Like that person gets to go at whatever slow pace they need to and like take little micro steps forward just to get to the point where they feel safe enough trusting another person being in the room with them, let alone trusting themselves to share something vulnerable with this person that they, you know, might take them months to build up feeling safety with. And then from there, like starting to use words to describe a situation and eventually getting to a point where they can relax enough to actually feel the physical release. Like it's so easy to go into comparison. And it's also, I know with a lot of my clients, which is probably a reflection of my own energy too, it's so easy to go into this like, must find the perfect plan and the perfect, like, well, which modality is the right one? And like, how do I know which one? And it's like, we don't. I mean, let's be honest. Most of us don't know shit about shit. Most of us are just making it all up all the time anyway. So we may as well just like relax and be okay with that. But it's like when it comes to healing, each of our journeys is so completely unique. And somebody who, I mean, you can take two people who went through the exact same terrible experience, like let's say like a war veteran or something. And one person might have incredibly deep, heavy, complex PTSD and be more or less incapacitated. And the other person's fine. And it's like, there's so many factors that influence that. And we can't put these like blanket approaches onto what is going to heal any one person or any one group of people. So I think there's so much room for us as individuals, I think, to take responsibility and like look at what, you know, what's going to work for me. And we kind of don't know sometimes until we try. And I think part of the way that we can find our way forward and it's like we become these detectives. In our own, we're like trying to crack the case of our own healing. You know, it's like you look at people with, you know, some weird, maybe autoimmune disease or something where they can't find what the cause is. And they just know they have all these different aches and pains. And they basically have to go on these like multi-year journeys of being detectives and being like, is it mercury poisoning? Is it heavy metals poisoning? Is it mold? Is it Lyme disease? Is it this? And like, but being like allowing yourself to become these detectives and advocates for ourselves and being, I think, like open and playful and willing to kind of experiment and try things. And then there's an element of, because how do you decide what to try next? You know, like, are you making some spreadsheet and weighing the pros and cons of each modality and the costs and stuff? Or are you just like, I'm inclined to have us lean more into our intuition in that way and be like, what are you drawn to? Where do you notice that little crackle of aliveness in your body that maybe is like, some part of your soul that's like, go check out this thing, you know, like maybe for someone who's like, oh, I've heard of somatic experiencing, but I didn't really know what it was. But then you start noticing like it's coming up in all sorts of different places. So you get more curious. And so like following those little breadcrumbs and the little whispers of your inner guidance and trusting that you're on your way, you're on the path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You read my mind or maybe not my mind, my vibe. I don't know. You picked up on the intuition thing. I was just thinking through as what you're sharing there of like, yeah. And it can be so confusing right now because there's so many amazing resources out there. Everyone's doing everything, diet, exercise, meditation, all the things. And I don't know, it's a cool time to be alive because of that. Yeah. It also can be very confusing.
Overwhelming.
Yeah. It's like, and then it feels very heady even as I'm like thinking of this and saying this, like, where to start? I don't know. Do I do this? Do I do that? I'm seeing this person on social media share about this and that. And all of it's great. And, but then too, then going neck down into your body. Okay. This person says this, this, this. And I actually do feel that little spark saying there's something in what she's saying, or there's something in her story. and letting those little things that you hopefully feel, not just in your head, be the steering, you know, the compass there that you do follow. But just the intuition cultivation is also so key. The self-trust, the connection to self. And from my experience, the best way to find that is by creating space and slowing down, feeling safe enough to just take a minute and see what shows up.
So if someone's listening to this and they are, let's say they're, I'd say probably someone who's like representative of a lot of my audience, which is like incredibly high achieving, ambitious, successful so far, like in career and other life things, like in the traditional sense, they've been following the roadmap that's been given to us by society that is like, do this, do this, do this, and you will be considered successful. And a lot of that has to do with prestige and achievement, accomplishment, and, you know, having a job title that's impressive and making enough money and having all the external markers of success, right? So somebody who's like doing all that, but they're maybe getting to a point in their life where they're like, something's missing, or they feel like something is off. They maybe feel disconnected from themselves and they don't necessarily know why, but they're starting to suspect like there's something here in this, like I might be living in my head and less in my body kind of situation. Like if you take a person like that, what would be like your first, if you gave them like a little roadmap of here's what to do first, here's how to start the journey of getting out of your head, getting into your body and exploring some of these things, what would you have them do?
Well, the first thing that pops in, two things pop in. One, you named it earlier, but just the pleasure, the things that you enjoy. That's usually my first question once I can kind of get to that this point in a conversation with someone, like what do you like to do? What do you love to do? Sometimes what makes you feel most alive? And you get all kinds of answers. Sometimes it might be something that you truly did. It's not all about inner child work these days, but I think there's a lot of power in remembering the things that brought you joy when you were younger. That energy, though, it's like at some point realize all this stuff, it's all energy based. And so the joy, the freedom, the whatever might be that next calling in life, what's that word? What's that energy? And realizing that doing the things that you love will probably start that. And it will get you into your body because feelings are in your body, period. So I could say go for a walk in nature, like actually go move your body, sign up for a yoga class, like getting into your body definitely helps, but you also can be in your body and not be embodied. And for all similar reasons and more that we talked about in terms of not being connected to the body. So that's where I'm kind of like, maybe in the past I'd say, well, we need to get you moving your body. That's how we're going to get you into your body. It's like, maybe, but it actually could be more of feeling the energy of something that feels light, feels fun, feels pleasurable. And just slow down with that and see what you start to feel. And the one other thing that popped to mind was a line from my meditation teacher translated this old text. It's thousands of years old, and he made it very poetic. And there's this one line, the ache in your heart is holy. And I think I heard that a bunch. And then finally, one day I heard it at the right time. And I was like, fuck, the ache in my heart. And I broke down. I could feel I literally had, and I had one of these psychic, the same lady actually said I was from Lumeria, from the Pacific. She said, you have a little chip. It's like on the back of your heart and it's just not totally whole. And then flash forward a few months, I was with one of my other yoga type teachers and she said that line and I just melted. And so that line really, I use it from time to time because I think people live with heartache and it doesn't mean it's from any one thing, but it's think of why is your heart maybe aching? Is it not getting the true success of this lifetime? Are you not getting the love, the adventure, the whatever is the thing that you really love the most? And I think that can create heartache. And that's a holy thing though, that ache. And to feel safe, find a way to get curious with that heartache because that's probably going to steer you more into one, your body, and two, that next rendition of an even more joyous, you name it, life.
That's such a beautiful way to express that and the ache of it. And to me, like if I translate that into Sandra speak, that makes me that puts me in the desires place. Like I'm such a, I beat my clients over the head with like the desire stick because I'm just like what I see the most around me, at least in the, you know, the kind of modern world circles that I travel in is how much we are we are guided by the external expectations, societal expectations, and the pressure to keep up and look a certain way and do all these things. And in doing so, we've lost touch with the desires of our heart, of our soul, like the things inside of us that are so uniquely ours. Like, and I really, in the manifestation world, you see a lot of different versions of the quote, like your desires are there for a reason. If the desire is in your heart, there's like the potential is there too, kind of a thing. And I think I really do believe that. And I believe that if we dare to be so bold as to actually listen to the desires in our heart, like that's the only guidance we need. And call it, I mean, I don't know if I would say desires of our heart or our soul or our intuition, if those are different things or just different, you know, words for the same thing, but I'll just lump it all together in one big like mush ball in the middle of my body. That's my inner GPS. But it's like the more that we can turn down the dial on like what I'm supposed to do and what's everybody else doing and what do I need to do to look successful and stuff. And if I can just look inside and be like, but what do I actually really want? I was putting something together for this thing earlier and I was trying to come up with an example of those two things. And I was like, you know, somebody has on their goals list, like buy a Tesla. And then it's, you try to look at, well, why do I want to buy a Tesla? Like, what's that? Is this desire even mine? And then they realize like, I want the Tesla because all my colleagues drive Teslas. So I really actually just want this Tesla so I can fit in because I want to feel normal and I want to feel cool and whatever with my work colleagues. But then if they look inside and they're like, what do I actually want to drive? And they're like, I want to drive a Jeep Wrangler because I want the wind in my hair and I want my surfboard in the back and I want there to be able to be sand in the back of my car. Like, you know, probably like everywhere in Encinitas in San Diego, right? It's like, right. Is there room for a surfboard and can it handle sand and salt water and wind, right? And then it's like, my identity is rugged and outdoorsy and like some like a salty witch, you know, and I want a car that matches that. I don't want a fucking Tesla. Like, that's not me, right? And I think there's so many different versions of that for all of us. And we look at like so many of my clients, you know, I try to get them in touch with their passions. And it's like the first round is they just sort of like list off some like sad, vague hobbies. You know, they're like gardening, cooking and going to museums, you know, but and which all of which are amazing things. But it's like you could tell there's like no aliveness in it. It's not like I feel like they're just reading out of a book, like somebody else's list of hobbies. And I'm like, but what do you really, you know, so then we try to dig a little bit deeper. And then it's like, sure, maybe they do like gardening, but what is it that they like about gardening? And it's like the feeling of like getting soil under their fingernails and having their hands in the earth. And like, they like the sun on their skin and the fresh air in their nose. And they like being out there with their kids and their kids are playing while they're digging around. And like, and then like in a few months they get fucking carrots that pop out of the ground. Like, how cool is that? You know, versus somebody else who's just like, I don't know, gardening. Cause it's just, life is boring. So it's just this thing I do. And so that like, this is such a rant, but like connecting to that desire in our heart or those desires in our heart, whether or our intuition or our soul, like if we can figure out how to let that be our fucking guide, like the rest is easier, not easy.
Yeah. I love that next layer. And it's just making me sense like that's kind of where we're at right now, because just as a culture in time and this point in life, like, cause we have all these tools and we've all heard it at this point. I say we, but I think most people have heard, well, what do you like to do? You know, name the things you like. And we're so rehearsed at it. We can just name the list off. We can go to our doctor and say the things we need to say. We can go to anybody, say the things. We're so good at saying things we need to say, but it's time to go that next level. And so even just the way I love doing, and I think I learned the gratitude stuff from you, but it's that, you know, like get more into the details of it. You know, what are you grateful for? And then go there. Like, you're so great at painting those pictures. And so I hope everyone just rewind it, everybody. If you didn't just hear how Sandra described the gardening, like do that with whatever you're currently trying to do or wherever you can find some monotony, like figure out how can I take my like gratitude to the next level? How can I take my, because that's also when it comes to meditation and this stuff, we have to go deeper now. Like the way the universe is right now too, we have to go deeper because that's just where we're at. So the old way of doing things a little more surface level, rehearsed, trying to keep up with the Joneses, like, wah, wah, like that's kind of just like boring old news.
Yeah, fuck and that noise.
No, it's just, it's time to do that next. I don't even know how to describe what you just did with that, the detail work like that. I'm just thinking next level, that deepening of your visions, the daydreams, the imaginations.
Yeah. I think when we get into the details, like, I mean, A, it just like makes a better story also, but B, when we connect with ourselves on such a deeper, more resonant level, when we figure out the details that are like authentic to each of us. You know, you take two people, they both love tropical vacations, which like sounds like, okay, great, tropical vacations. But like for one person, it's like the bougiest, fanciest, five-star everything. They love their fancy cocktails. They're like out on these beautiful boats, they're snorkeling. For somebody else, it's they're doing like, I don't know, some tough mudder, like rugged, the dirtiest, like rugged camping. And that's their version of it. So it's like each of us has our unique expression of every passion, every desire, every goal, every preference. And I think the more that we lean into those things and it takes time to identify them. Like we have to experiment and like notice ourselves, notice like, how does this make me feel? And how do I feel around other people doing these things? And then the more intimately we know ourselves, the more we can design our lives to be full of those things, but also like speak up for what we want and make requests and set boundaries in our relationships with other people. And just, yeah. And so much of that comes back to embodiment. It comes back to being in touch with who we are, not just in our amazing, beautiful brains, but also, or perhaps even more so, in our amazing, beautiful bodies.
For sure. 1,000,000,000,000%.
Brilliant percent. I love it. So many.
It's in the body, people. In the body.
It's in the body. Whatever your question is, the answer is it's in the body. At least for today's theme. So, Rebecca, we're going to let you go here in a moment. But where can people find you? I know you're on the internet in some different places. Where should they go to find you? And is there anything in particular, any of your offerings that you want to highlight?
Yeah. Well, I am on the internet, as you said. So you can always just head to my website, which is my name. It's spelled a little differently. It's Rebecca with two K's, R-E-B-E-K-K-A, Mars, M-A-R-S, all one word, .com. And so, of course, everything is there. I like to play mostly on Instagram, and that's at Rebecca.Mars. And I think Instagram went down a little bit yesterday. So I always have that thought of like, I'm not going to just rely on Instagram, but I do love just to create. So I try to put a lot of aliveness up. I've always just been a nature nut. So I'm just infusing mind, body, and nature on my feed there. But I've had an ongoing cruise letter for probably as long as we've talked about my professional career. So it's my newsletter. It goes out maybe biweekly, maybe weekly, maybe monthly, but that's also a link there on my website. And yeah, probably toss it in the show notes. And I do probably once or twice a year this year run my Lit Living. So Live in Truth, which that's even more about truth, self-truth, intuition, living in all of that, lighting yourself up again. So that tends to be 6 to 8 weeks. And that's an online group coaching program. So probably figuring out where to do that, but I have a wait list going for that. So that's always a lot of fun as well. And more meditations to come. So really any of those spots, you're also going to get some embodied meditation things too.
And for anyone who's down in your neck of the woods in San Diego, especially near Encinitas, can they come find you at any yoga studios?
Yeah, right now I'm at Yoga 6 in Solana Beach, which was kind of a full circle moment for me there. But yeah, let me know. Awesome. You can come be my guest. Yeah.
So thank you, Rebecca, so much for your time and sharing your wisdom and your experiencing your, now I'm not going to be able to say experience without saying experiencing your experience with somatic experiencing and all your other many chapters of your life with us. It was such a joy to connect with you also. And just to talk a little bit before recording too, just to reconnect. You are really, truly just such a presence and you have such a calming, grounding impact. And I love like connecting my little avatar brain, plugging it into your paradigm for a hot second because it just soothes my whole being. So thank you for being with us today.
Gosh, well, thank you. And likewise, I mean, I know I had a huge moment being more engaged with you, but of like, what would Sandra do was like, should have tattooed on my hand because, you know, reversal there. So thank you. It's been so fun to reconnect and hopefully stay connected. Oh, yeah.
And listener, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, one thing you could do is screenshot it, post it on the social medias and tag us so we can celebrate you and thank you for sharing. You can also rate and review the show. We always appreciate that. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. I love you and I will see you in the next episode. Bye.